honestly, I've been pretty disappointed in our starters so far. And I think, obviously, this is my third start. Two of my starts were terrible, in my opinion. So I'm no help to the problem. But I just think the biggest thing for us is just getting our starters going. I know I'm so confident in all the guys we have. It's just the first 10, 11 games have been pretty rough for us, to be honest with you, outside of Berrios. So, just get our starters going. Give the bullpen guys some time off and don't have them like eating so many innings, so to speak.
That was Chris Bassitt after last night's win. You wouldn't know it if you listened to him. It was Chris Bassitt after last night's 5-3 win over the Seattle Mariners. Chris Bassitt throwing 115 pitches. The last time a Blue Jays starter threw 115 pitches at any point, whether in any month of the season, was 2017. When our very good friend Marcus Stroman threw 117 pitches against the Cleveland Guardians. It is Blair and Barker. It is a pregame edition of Blair and Barker. First pitch at 3:07. The Jays going for a sweep of the Seattle Mariners at the Rogers Center. A reminder that Blair and Barker will be on after the game as well with Blue Jays Talk.
Winning edition.
Winning edition of Blue Jays Talk. Ahead of guaranteed win weekend with the Colorado Rockies coming in town. And you can call the back leg line, 416-413-3959. You can leave us a voice note and leave your name and location with it, and we will get you on the air. And you can also text us at 590-590.
And name. A location. If not, you are not getting on.
And just don't say
you're wasting time.
Bob in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
I want to know where you're from in Saskatchewan, because I probably either visited it or know somebody who lives there. Because, I mean, I've lived everywhere in this country.
Yeah, almost. I've been alive a long time.
So. That's not what I meant, but fact of the matter is, so leave a name and location.
Yeah.
And, hey, we'll give you a shout-out.
No question.
As well.
Show for the people.
Show for the people, exactly. So, Kevin Barker, we spend all our time. Oh, we need to tell people, the Jays have made a trade.
Ooh.
Late-breaking trade just before we came in the air. Wes Parsons has been traded to the Cleveland Guardians for international signing bonus space.
Wes is a good guy. Maybe he'll get a few more opportunities with the Guardians than he would have gotten with the Blue Jays. Maybe that's good for the player. Hope so. He's a good dude. I know he tries hard. Secondary stuff's decent. Velocity, yeah. It's a little all over the place, but
so that
Guardians are a pitch-first organization. Yeah. Maybe he can go there and figure some things out, maybe in the big leagues a long time.
That would suggest maybe that there's a move imminent. The Jays have tomorrow off. Off day. What happens on an off day?
Leave your phone at home.
Leave your phone at home if you're on the bubble.
You want to send me down? You're going to have to find me.
It's a good day to go to Niagara Falls tomorrow
with
if
no
you're on
cell
the bubble
phone.
With no cell phone.
Hey, sorry about your luck.
Yeah. So possibly, Bowden Francis is due to make a start. Possibly, I mean, I think in the Jays' perfect world, one of Jordan Romano or Eric Swanson comes back. And of course, Yariel Rodriguez. We've heard a lot about Yariel Rodriguez possibly coming up here. This all ties together because one of the reasons we played the Chris Bassitt clip off the start, Kevin, is it seems like all we've talked about is lack of offense, lack of offense, lack of offense. You know, the pitchers should sue these guys for non-support, et cetera, et cetera. And not to say that two wins against the Seattle Mariners is necessarily a sign of a breakout, although two pretty good pitchers they beat, even though they're not probably not up to snuff right now. But, Kevin, the Jays have allowed 23 home runs. That's five more than the second-place St. Louis Cardinals. Their starters have given up 13. That's tied St. Louis for the most. The relievers obviously have given up 10. That's one more than the Los Angeles Dodgers. As a whole, the Jays' ERA is 5.09, which is the seventh worst in baseball. The teams behind them are awful. Colorado, well, not awful. Colorado, Seattle, they're pitching scuffling. We know about that. The Washington Nationals, Minnesota Twins, Oakland Athletics, Miami Marlins. And if you look at the stats, the Jays are in the bottom quarter of most of the important and most of the underlying pitching stats. So Chris Bassitt says the starting rotation has to be better. Is he right?
Yeah, I think so. I think third time through is sort of when everybody starts, you know, being a little bit more centered, a little bit more grounded. You know, the mechanics are a little bit better. They got a little bit better game plan. They can go out and execute it. They're past overthrowing and trying too hard and used to sort of the, you know, leaving Florida when it's warm, going to some cold spots, trying to get used to that, trying to throw a few more strike ones, being a little bit more efficient with strike three. You know, Chris looked like, I said this yesterday, when you asked me what you need to see from him, and the first thing I said was they need to play better defense behind him. They did that by turning the double plays, right? He made a pitch when they had to. They made the plays when they had to make them. And I said also that the velocity on the two fastballs, the cutter and the sinker, needed to go up.
Velo was up on every pitch.
Absolutely, and that would make it easier for him to throw more sweepers, more sliders, more curveballs, and more split fingers whenever he gets a better feel with the split finger, you know, second time. Through against those lefties, he started throwing a few more of those and got some big outs when he needed them. And I think just by throwing a little harder, right, it was instead of being the 89-91, it's the 91-93 and an occasional 94-95 if he's really feeling frisky and, you know, big time of the game and he really needs an out and he can elevate maybe a four-seamer that he always doesn't throw. He's got the little extra gear to get him out. Yeah, look, I think this is what you should hear from one of your better pitchers is – they sort of know, you know, what makes that whole thing work is the guy standing on the mound who takes the ball in the first inning,
yeah.
And they need to be a little bit better. I say I'm a glass half full, and I'm in a good mood today. Jeff, and you mentioned the home runs. You know, you can say 15 of those are solo shots. That's okay, right? I know they've given up 8 with runners on base. That's not the greatest. Bowden France has given up 4 of those, yeah. Right?
And Parsons has given up.
Yeah, he gave up a couple. You know, so. Gosman's given up 3. Bass has given up 3. Just the at-bats – whenever they're now third time through, should look a lot better. They should be able to pitch to a guy's weakness. If you can't hit a breaking ball, throw him a breaking ball. If they don't like the fastball in or up, throw it in or up. So I think this is sort of when you start grading them. Forget about the first 2 starts. Mm-hmm. Grade them from their third start on, and so far, so good.
The Jays lineup for today really contains no surprises. George Springer's leading off in right field. Vladdy is hitting second. He gets a day at DH. Bo Bichette is at shortstop. Justin Turner at first base. Kevin Biggio at second. Alejandro Kirk behind the plate. Kevin Kiermaier in center. Ernie Clement gets a start at third base. Dalton Varsho is in left. Yusei Kikuchi's on the mound for the Blue Jays. Logan Gilbert gets a start for the Seattle Mariners. We talked a little bit about Luis Castillo and George Kirby having a little bit of a wobble early season. Logan Gilbert's been the best of the three so far early in the season. What's the Jays plan of attack? Let me rephrase that. Last night we saw a guy, you mentioned this in Blue Jays talk, we saw a guy who's working on some stuff, you know, trying to get the secondary pitches to go it's just going to happen eventually, to go strike to ball. We saw a guy working on stuff. What should their approach be tonight against Logan? Yes, just stop laughing about it against Logan Gilbert.
This guy's working on stuff, too. He's added a cutter. You know, he had the split finger last year. That's a decent pitch for him. The size of him is what gives hitters problem.
How so?
He's 6'6". He has the most extension on his pitches in all of baseball at 7.8 feet.
So what does that mean to a layman?
That means he releases the ball, and it seems like he's just dropping it in the catcher's glove. So his 95, 96, 97, 98 could look 196, 97, and 98 because of how closely it looks like he is releasing the baseball. So just that alone right there, if you see that stat, and I know they know that, if you walk into the plate, you're telling yourself first and foremost, be ready to hit. How do I get my foot down on time so I can get the barrel out in front of the plate? I want to have that imaginary plate out in front of the original plate. That will just give me a little room for error because he's a hard thrower. He's got a good split finger. He's got a good breaking ball. Yeah, he's throwing the cutter now, so you're going to get that if you're right-handed. You're going to get that if you're left-handed. And he's not married to it, but he is going to throw it to you. But you got to tell yourself, be ready to hit. Get in an athletic
position.
Get it
ready. Get the foot down early. Hit's coming.
Boom. And just be ready to hit. And if you can do that, give yourself a chance and compete. I mean, they've been doing that the last couple of days, right? George Springer's been competing. Bo's been competing. You know, Vladdy's not getting a ton of hits, but his competition level at the plates went up. And you can say that trickle down. IKF, 6 for his last 12. Mm-hmm. Like, they're competing better. You know, Turner, 6 doubles. which is second in baseball, all has come with two strikes. Yeah. Like, it's a big deal, right? They're competing a little bit better. So that's what you tell yourself. Don't overthink it. I mean, he's a big dude. Get it ready to hit. Get a decent pitch to hit. And when you get it, don't miss it. So, and just continue to do that. Build off of what you did yesterday.
I was going to say, I think if you wanted to sort of package a game and or an approach and say this is kind of what we probably need to do to be successful. You look at last night's game. Bo gets his home run. There were balls in play. They put a lot of pressure on a pitcher who was scuffling. Balked a runner to second base. Mm-hmm. Couple of stolen bases. One of them, Kevin Biggio, steal. Run scores as a result of that. Mm-hmm. You pointed out, and Shai actually points out in his article today on sportsnet.ca as well, a great example of Dalton Varsho's base running, scoring a run in that single to George Springer, or by George Springer, where he has to kind of break back a bit.
With two strikes.
And then take, I mean, it was
a clean game.
It was, it was almost, we talked about what can this team do to sort of create a home field advantage. Because I think we're aware now that this team isn't going to, I don't think we can expect this team to hit a ton of home runs. So it seems to me that approach, that type of game yesterday, is probably more of what we are going to see from the Blue Jays. Yeah. I'm not saying that if you want to go off and hit four home runs or five home runs this afternoon, have at it.
Yeah.
But I'm not expecting that anymore.
Yeah, maybe they don't have to do that to, you know, compete and have a good team, have a tough lineup to work through. Like, 1-9 is going to battle you. And the Dalton Varsho thing's a big deal base running wise because he's hitting the buck 47.
You talked about this, how easy it would be to just
to soak. And, you know, he's thinking about, I had a good spring training. The things I were working on in the off seasons was translating. I get in the season, it's not. Like, you can hang your head and not pay attention. And now you get a guy with two strikes and, you know, your first move is freeze and go back. How many bad base running do we see? And then he scores on it, too. He's very flat-footed. He hustles. He, you know, his route running around third. I know it's baseball 101, but the base running at the big league level is atrocious.
Yeah,
for this dude to be able to do that with what's going on offensively for him, give him tons of credit. I mean, it's little things like that, right, is how you win games sometimes that probably you're not supposed to win. By little things like that, if they can consistently do that, be a really good team.
If you're not hitting, you got to figure out a way to get in the lineup.
Absolutely.
And one of the ways you get in the lineup, and this is kind of a captain obvious thing, but one of the ways you get in the lineup is you don't make mistakes when you're in a position where you can have an impact in the game. So that means catching the ball. It means throwing to the right base. It means being smart in the base pass, getting a good secondary, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff. If you do that, you're scuffling. You're back in the lineup today.
There you go. Like, it's, you know, there's, it's, I know, again, we're stating the obvious and everybody should go, well, you know, they're big leaguers. They should be able to do all these things, right? Well, you don't see it all the time.
No, well, you don't.
And
you
especially don't see it against dude. They're hitting a buck 47.
Exactly. And you don't see it. Like, yeah.
You don't. And
it was starting to say, we haven't seen it at times from this team when guys are going well, too. I mean.
Yeah, he started the season hitting fifth. He ain't hitting fifth no more. Basically, that manager's telling you that you're having some issues offensively, but we still need you to be a really good defender and run the bases the way we all know that you can. Steal a base when you're supposed to steal it. Like, do those things. And to his credit, he's doing that. Good for him. I mean, that's just what you have to. It's, you know, it's not the easiest thing to always do.
Are you surprised that we're seeing Justin Turner at first? We've seen him at third. We know yesterday he was taking grounders at second. Again, guys can, that could just be because he's bored and he's trying to kill time. Who knows? But we know that he played second last, he's played second as well, obviously, recently.
It's an easy one.
You think we're going to see maybe more of Justin Turner in the field than we may have thought?
I think they're trying to get their best offense on the field. Ernie Clement right now against a dude that's, you know,
he's got
9 feet tall and the extension that he has and, you know, is bat the ball guy and can put the ball in play like Ernie can. You want to put the best offense on the field first, and then you're trying to maneuver around. And if you can give an everyday guy off like Vladdy or a half a day and DH him, and that's not a lot of moving around for Turner. Like, it's, you know, I'm sure they've scheduled these things out when they're going to do this day game and after night game. And, you know, who they're facing and how the other role players are doing. You know, who do you want to get in the lineup when they're hot and who gives you a better chance of scoring more runs? I mean, it makes perfect sense. And you say Kikuchi, oh, by the way, is throwing tons of ground balls all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So you want a pretty good defense. And we had Ernie on yesterday. And, you know, he's talking about the fast twitch muscles on the left side of the infield and the arm strength and those kind of things. So, yeah, I like the way they're trying to maneuver around, get the best lineup on the field. And, you know, it's not always about run prevention. You also got to score runs. And they can see when you do get a lead how much easier it is for John, for Pete Walker, you know, for all the coaches to make the right move, if not all the time, most of the time, because you do have a lead because the guys you're putting in the lineup are hot and having good at-bats and battling and, you know, getting the big hit when they need to get it. So, yeah, I like it. This is the way it's supposed to look, isn't it? This is the way it's supposed to look. When a team's struggling and you should beat them, they come to the Rogers Center, you're beating them. It's sort of simple, right? That's, I think, the way it's supposed to be. You pitch when you're supposed to pitch. You field it. You catch it. You run it. You get the big hit when you're supposed to get it. And I think this is why we're talking about, you know, this is the way it could look. And if they start hitting some homers, especially with some dudes on base, that can make it mean that much better.
What would it mean for this team to sweep a series, the first home series of the year, considering coming off that 4-6 road trip, considering everything we were talking about with this team? What do you think it would mean?
I think it's big, too. I think that'd tell you that, you know, what Chris is talking about the rotation.
And it's three good pitchers you're pitching. Again, they're not pitching well right now, but
you still got to go out and have good at-bats and get a hit when you're supposed to.
And you haven't run into three consecutive good pitchers like this
year
so far.
That are right-handed, that can throw to a weakness, that have the movement that those three guys have. You know, they all bring different challenges. And they're overcoming those, which is sort of a cool kind of thing. Yeah, it's a big deal. Like, confidence is everything in baseball. I went through that. Every baseball player that's ever tried to play consistently and do well, you know, that having that good mindset and being confident when you show up to the yard, that everything you've been working on off the field is going to translate and actually have it take place, only is going to give you more confidence. So, absolutely, right? And then you have one of your better pitches maybe calling you out a little. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, be good enough. We need to be better to make everybody else around us better, which,
I think what you're hearing from Chris Bassitt, too, is the concern, and it's understandable. You don't have Swanson. You know, you don't have Romano. John Schneider has mentioned this a couple of times, even when he, you know, just sort of unsolicited, has mentioned that they're thin in the bullpen right now.
Yeah.
I can't put it any other way. They're thin in the back end of the bullpen. I would suggest that, you know, really, if you're John Schneider right now, you've got absolute trust in Trevor Richards. You know, Tim Meza is looking for something. Yimmy Garcia.
Yeah.
You know, Chad Green, you've given the ball to. But, you know, other than that, Yenesis Cabrera. You know, again, I mentioned Tim Meza. He's searching for stuff. He's probably going to be fine. But right now, he's not the Tim Meza that you expect. Nate Pearson he's been Nate Pearson. He's had a couple of great, you know, the couple of at-bats he had with the Yankees. Judge and Rizzo were really good. Other times, he's looked like Nate Pearson. Yeah. So I think maybe if you're, you know, Chris Bassitt, the message is not just so much the production from the rotation, but just the idea that the bullpen's really thin right now, and we got to pick them up here. And I'll tell you what, if you say Kikuchi can give them six today,
every once in a while you need one of your
off day.
Every once in a while you need one of your better players to kick some guys in the backside. And I think that was what Chris was trying to do.
And he did it the right way. He included himself in it.
Well, he cleaned it up, too, by saying, I believe in this group. Yeah. Like, this group's really good, and if we throw strike one and we're efficient with two strikes and, you know, we're mechanically sound and the velocity's there, and, you know, that's what you say. You say we're just throwing too many pitches in any. Like, that's what it is. Throw more strikes with your fastball. I mean, his fastball's getting hammered. What are they hitting, 400? Slugging 600.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting – that heater's getting hammered. I mean, his breaking ball's better. Right? He's throwing it, I think, a little bit more than he probably should, because just looks like the confidence. And a lot with Yusei for me is more mental and too much of the heart rate. Like, if he can control those two things, because other things are better, the extension is better on all of his pitches. That will tell you that he's found something mechanically that works for him.
He looks
the uptick in velocity is there.
He looks better, but the results aren't.
It's just the heart rate. When the heart rate goes up because it's early in the season, it's who you're facing. That's like today, you know, an old team. Stay within yourself. Be efficient, and then you can expand because you throw hard. You're left-handed. That's rare. They don't see a ton of that. You're facing a team that's struggling, so you can get away with some mistakes, but you got to pound the zone, right? Control the walks. I mean, he's walking a few too many people. So, you know, just simplify it. Simplify it enough. Control the heart rate. Throw strike one, and then start expanding with the things that you like to throw, you know, in certain kind of counts to certain kind of guys. And run with that. Yeah, it would be nice to see six out of him. That would be a lot of fun.
So a day after John Schneider gets booed for taking Jose Berríos out of a game, he lets Chris Bassitt go out for the seventh inning.
I'm not sure he let that happen. I think that was more Chris Bassitt. Yeah.
115 pitches, I mentioned. It's the most by a Blue Jays starter since Marcus Stroman threw 117 in 2017. It's also the most pitches thrown by any major league starter in the month of March or April since 2021. What does that say to you about Chris Bassitt, Kevin? Because we also saw that, you know, we now know it was clearly nothing, but we also saw that discussion in the dugout in the third inning. And a lot of people called up Blue Jays talk about it, and Buck and Dan mentioned it, where it was Pete Walker and John Schneider and the trainer and Chris Bassitt. And when I see that happening, like, I got to think that part of me for a minute and a half wondered, and then you see Bassitt go down the tunnel. I know guys do go in the dugout, but I'm sitting there thinking, okay, that's interesting. Clearly it wasn't an issue. It didn't come up in the post game. I haven't heard anything about it today. 115 pitches would suggest that it's probably fine. But, what does that say that Chris Bassitt, that he would do that and that they would let him do it?
Yeah, I think he was feeling really good about his stuff. I think that's the obvious answer to that is the velocity. I said this, he needs a little extra gear. He's not a 98 guy, but when it's 91 to 94 in there, consistently at that 93 mark, and it has the later movement, it just gets guys cheating a little to have to, you know, get the head out. And when you do that and the front side opens up and, you know, your eyes are moving a little bit more, then you can get away with a few more bad breaking stuff, and it allows you to get away with, you know, throwing some more secondary pitches that you normally wouldn't throw. So I think it's more that than anything else.
The reason I was asking you is I'm wondering – you know, we look back at the decision with Jose Berríos. The fact that John Schneider let Chris Bassitt go out, I wonder if maybe the discussion between Schneider and Berríos on the mound was, you know, maybe it wasn't just John saying, you're out of here. Maybe it was more like...
Yeah, I know the John haters, that's the first thing they're going to point at, right? And you know, you see Jose coming off the field and he's yelling into his glove.
Maybe he's given an option.
Yeah. I would think sometimes, you know, sometimes the obvious answer is probably not the obvious answer. And, you know, again, I think the obvious guys in that rotation have earned the right to make up their own mind. And John is not going to get in the way. Yeah. I mean, he ain't trying to go out there and screw things up on purpose. Like, that's not his job. His job is to get the best out of that guy and also keep that guy healthy. And whatever that number is, he ran out there for a reason, John did. But you could tell, you could read his lips basically saying, how do you feel? And it's almost like, do you want this guy?
I went back and looked at it, and you know what? And actually, it's a person who follows baseball here mentioned. That was a bit of a long discussion for give me the ball.
Most of the time, at least the times that I've been on the mound, I haven't been on a – you know, most of the time with a mound with a rotation like this, it's earned the right, you know, one through four at least to make up their own mind a lot of the times. But usually the conversation is not – the manager's not going to run out there and tell you why he's taking you out.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the conversation. Normally when he runs out there and he's got his mind made up, he's just going to hold his hand out wanting the baseball. He ain't going to have a conversation and tell you. He might say, hey, great job. You know, your breaking ball got better, didn't it? Like, to make him laugh, you know, just to – basically tell him that he had a really good start. And in that conversation was a little too long in my mind. And it just seems like that probably the conversation was in a different direction. And, you know, I by no means am I thinking that he let Chris go out for an extra inning. I'm sure that was Chris going, I know what we're not doing in the pen, and I know who's not here. Yeah. rather let me run it. I feel good. The velocity's still there, right? It's like Kevin Gausman is, in his mind, says, because he said this to me and said this to a bunch of people, that when he has a good start, it's about exit velocity. When he's getting some weak contact, that will tell you that everything's working. I'm thinking that, you know, Chris's velocity maintained through 115 pitches basically told him that, you know, I can weather this storm for you. I can run out there and get this done. Let me do it. I'd rather you let me do it than have somebody else go out there.
3:07 is the first pitch this afternoon. The Blue Jays looking to sweep the Seattle Mariners. Ben Schulman will have the call of the game on Sportsnet, and he'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker, pregame edition on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker, pregame show edition on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet. A reminder, we will be doing Blue Jays talk following...
Winning edition.
Winning edition of Blue Jays talk following the game. And you can join us by leaving a question on our back leg line. The number is 416-413-3959. Leave your name and location, or we just won't use it.
Absolutely not.
I mean, we've had enough of that.
Just don't even waste your time.
We did that to you the last time. The last time we gave you a mulligan. Now, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So name and location, 416-413-3959. If you want to text us, 590-590 is the text line. Same deal, though. Name and location. And
it's not hard.
It's not. And again, and don't just say the province. It's a big country. Tell me where you're from in the province.
Your address.
Your address, but tell me where you're from in the province, because I may know something about the place.
Do they carry you there?
I may know about all the place. Right. Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner at first, Biggio, Kirk, Kiermaier, Clement, Varsho, Kikuchi. That is the Jays lineup for the third game of this three-game series against the Mariners. They're going for the sweep. Ben Schulman will have the call of the game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, along with Chris LaRue. Ben Schulman joins us on Blair and Barker. Good afternoon, Mr. Schulman.
Good afternoon, guys. It's Ben from Toronto. Appreciate you.
First time, long time, right?
Oh, yeah. Very long time.
Quick question for you. The Jays traded Wes Parsons to Cleveland today for international bonus space, signing bonus space. Is this an indication that perhaps after tomorrow's off day, there may be some sort of move made in addition to the pitching staff at some point?
It's possible. Wes didn't have a 40-man spot. They gave that spot to Paulo Espino. So
okay.
I'm not entirely sure what it means overall, but they are long-term going to have to, you know, replace him in Buffalo. Parsons was incredibly important to the Bisons last year, started more games for them than anyone. So it is certainly possible that frees them up some space there to, you know, add someone, maybe another depth option, someone who wants to pitch at AAA and try and, you know, bide their time and see if they're needed on the major league roster.
So do we know anything further about Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson in particular, or even Yariel Rodriguez?
We do know, and I'm not sure if any of our Sportsnet colleagues have tweeted this out already, but John Schneider did say today that Swanson and Romano are going to end up pitching in Buffalo tomorrow on rehab appearances. So I think that's really exciting for them. You know, Swanson will be his second overall, and Romano, it seems like if he's jumping right there that, you know, maybe he can, you know, get back to himself pretty quickly. He did have, you know, a more uninterrupted spring than some of the other guys that are still on the injured list. So, that's exciting for the Blue Jays overall, because they would certainly use those two plenty once they're back.
Ben, speaking of excited, why should I be so excited now to watch the Jays lineup hit?
I think that, you know, what they were trying to build, at least what they were saying they were trying to build in the offseason, has started to come to fruition a little bit here. I think that, you know, again, this isn't a team predicated on the home run like some of the teams the last couple years. It's a lot of contact and tough at-bats, and I turn right to George Springer's at-bat. I think it was the hit he had in the fourth, or no, it was the hit he had in the third. Dalton Varsho's on first. He's dancing around a lot, which draws, you know, a third throw over and gets him an extra 90 feet. But part of the reason that Varsho got those 90 feet is George Springer's fouling off, I believe, 8, maybe 9 pitches
right
in a row, putting a ton of pressure on Kirby. He comes up with a single, and because of this team-centric approach where they're trying to wear guys down, you know, the kind of cliche pass the baton type deal, Kirby's so worn down that even with two strikes, he kind of hangs a breaking ball a little bit to Bo Bichette. It wasn't an awful pitch, but it wasn't a great pitch, and Bichette slammed it out of the park into the second deck. They're starting to string some hits together a little bit here. I think they're really, really tough outs, you know, especially now that some of the top-of-the-order guys are starting to get more into the swing of things. Turner continues to be a nightmare for pretty much every pitcher he's seen so far. And then you're even getting some contributions from, you know, IKF has 5 hits over the last 2 games. It's 12 games in, but he's hitting over .300 right now. Yep. He doesn't swing and miss a ton. So I think this kind of wearing down the pitcher, putting the ball in play, putting pressure on defenses, it's starting to play out here. And Luis Castillo and George Kirby are no joke. So I think if they can pull that off against these guys, maybe it's a sign that they're starting to get into their groove here with still a lot of the season to go.
Yep. You know, the more I watch the more I watch this team play, Ben, the more I kind of wonder if maybe, and I haven't, you know, I haven't really done a deep dive into this, but it occurred to me last night that I'd watched the Boston Red Sox opener, and I was thinking about some of those Red Sox teams, and it seems to me that this could be very much like that Red Sox team that won the World Series, and when they had Shane Victorino, and remember Steve Pierce was traded from the Jays to Boston and was the MVP. Coming out of spring training, Dan Shaughnessy wrote, this was the worst Red Sox team in some time. And I wonder if maybe, you know, you look at how they played the game, if maybe that may not turn out to be this group's MO.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people want one way of offense right now. You're looking for big swings a lot of the time. You know, you want to line up Betts and Freeman and Otani and all these and Muncy and hit balls out of the yard. And look, a lot of baseball's going that way, but it's not the only way that you can get it done. I think back to the Kansas City Royals team as well that beat the Blue Jays in the ALCS and won the World Series. And a lot of the time, people look back at them and they're like, well, I don't know how they did it. They didn't have any power guys. They were playing old-fashioned. It's like sometimes you don't have to do what everyone else is doing, and guys aren't as prepared to deal with a team like this because they're used to a bunch of these free-swinging home run hitters all throughout lineups. I mean, you can find those guys a lot around Major League Baseball those days. There are plenty of guys going up there trying to finish their seasons with 30 homers, and I think they give teams a bit of a different look. It's 2 good offensive days. I don't think that, you know, they've necessarily solved anything, just like I didn't think anything was broken after, you know, a handful of bad offensive days to start the year. But I do think there's a blueprint here where they can, you know, sneak up on a lot of people. They can really, really wear down starters. I really like the fact that they've hit against both starters in these last 2 games. I think that's impressive to do. And when you get it going early, either you're going to get even more offense second time through, or you dive into these bullpens really early. I mean, Seattle used 6 different pitchers yesterday. It's going to be interesting how they're going to deploy their bullpen today. You're going to have more tired guys they've seen. So I think they're throwing it back a little bit with the way that they want to do it. But like you said, I think it's worked out before, and we'll have to wait and see plenty more games before we know if this version of the Blue Jays is a sustainable, strong offense. But you can definitely see flashes of how it could cause some fits for other teams pitching.
I love the fastball velocity from Yusei. It's been unbelievable, right? That 96, it's odd from a lefty. You just don't see that a ton. And you can tell some of the swings that they take on that pitch is, you know, it's more on the defensive side than it is being very aggressive and thinking that they can hit that thing hard. But they are hitting .400 against that, and they're slugging .600 against it. Do you think they think, meaning the Blue Jays and Pete Walker, that part of his game is an easy fix? And maybe if he does fix it, you know, it's the pitches per plate appearance, it's the pitches per inning will go down, and he'll go deeper in a game, and they won't have to use as many bullpen arms.
Yeah, I think it's so, you know, with him, it seems like we get back to this spot a lot. it's so command-based at the end of the day, not just throwing strikes, but not leaving balls out over the plate. Like you said, I mean, 96 out of the hand of a lefty is not something that most guys are gearing up for or ready for from a starting pitcher. You might see it occasionally out of the bullpen, but even that's rare enough as is. So I think if he's not giving him good ones to hit, even if he's just more on the edges if he misses his spots, I think that can be huge for Kikuchi. And I really like the way that his off-speed pitches have looked so far, especially the curveball, I thought, was really, really good for him last time out. So if he can do enough with the fastball that guys aren't, you know, really getting all over it, then I think he, you know, looks like himself from last season, which was a career year. And I liked what he did against the Yankees overall. I thought that he had a really strong outing. Obviously, the numbers would say that too. And this team, this organization at least knows him well. The Mariners change out basically the whole team every year, but this organization knows him pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see him pitch against Seattle. But if he can just locate his fastball well enough, now he doesn't have to be Chris Bassitt, but well enough, then I think guys stay off it. Overall, it should be a tough pitch to hit.
Ben, do you think that Kirky, this will be his 11th start out of the 13 games behind the plate? That's a lot, right? He's one for his last 10 offensively. Do you think just conditioning-wise, and because where he hits in the order, and he's come up a couple times, the bases loaded, like those are big-time at-bats. They're hoping that he can do some things offensively and hit some balls hard in a big part of the field. I just wonder about the playing time behind the plate because we have seen – you know, sort of the offense suffers when he has to do that. In your mind, or do you think that they feel like he can sort of weather that and maybe be a little bit better offensively?
Yeah, they talked about, they being John Schneider yesterday, about seeing the swings change a little bit over the last couple of days and look better. And mentioned, too, how difficult it is really to catch this often. Yeah. I wasn't sure he was going to get in the lineup today. I mean, this is third game in a row, day game after night game, but they said they wouldn't put him in these spots if they didn't think he could handle it. They have liked what he's been doing behind the plate overall, and I do think you see, you know, some of that fatigue in the fact that, hey, he's not hitting for a very high average at all, but he leads the team in RBIs right now. It does seem like when he really needs to hone in on something, when he comes up in the biggest of spots, he has delivered a good handful of time for the Blue Jays, like he did in game one of this series when he knocked Justin Turner in to open up the scoring for the Blue Jays. So I think if he can get a little bit more rest going forward, hint, hint, Danny Jansen is DHing today for the Buffalo Bisons,
nice,
as you guys might have already mentioned. So that maybe points toward him being back soon. I think that can be big for Kirk. I mean, when we saw Kirk win a Silver Slugger, he was catching a lot, sure, but he was also DHing a lot. And I think that allowed him to be a little bit fresher at the plate. And to me, it's understandable right now. I mean, very few guys will catch 11 out of 13 at all this season on any major league team. So I think that if he, you know, gets a little bit more rest going forward, you might see the at-bats start to be a little bit stronger.
Sure.
Ben, we're going to let you run and rest the pipes. Thanks so much for doing this. I look forward to your call this afternoon. Be well.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much. Look forward to listening to Jay's talk after the game.
Awesome.
Take care, man. Ben Shulman will have a call of the game along with Chris LaRue today. The Jays and the Mariners, 3:07 first pitch. Jays going for the series sweep. So a couple of things. One, my bad. I forgot that Wes Parsons, that Paolo Espino had taken his spot in the 40-man. So I put two and two together and came up with seven. We know now Danny Jansen is DHing for the Buffalo Bisons today. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are going to pitch in relief for Buffalo tomorrow. And Alec Manoa is scheduled to start at AAA on Saturday. So we wish Alec all the best.
Absolutely.
In his start in Buffalo.
Absolutely.
Hope that he...
Throwing hard, throwing strike one. That slider's really good.
And
they're going to need him. Like, let's not lie about it. Yep. They're going to need him. It makes their team better if they could put a Bowden Francis in a pen and sort of be the Swiss Army knife that can come in the fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth and sort of be the way they want him to be.
So there you go. Fingers crossed for Alec Manoa. And if you look at the way the schedule is now, the Jays have tomorrow off. Then they've got three against Colorado. And I'm calling it guaranteed win weekend just because I know it drives a lot of you nuts and you're sitting there. It's commentator's curse, and I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be clear. This could have been a lot worse for the Blue Jays. If they can get through this game, if you say Kikuchi can give them a bit of length today, they can get through this game. Now you got an off day. You've got a team coming in that you should be able to handle.
Mm.
you might, and now you got the Yankees coming in after Colorado. So maybe you get Romano and Swanson. I think it's the Yankees, right? Maybe you get Romano and Swanson back in time for the series after the Rocky series. And who knows with Alec Manoah. I would have to think it'd have to be more than one start. This is just me. It'd probably have to be more than one start for Alec Manoah before you make a decision.
I just wonder, because he has been gone a long time, I just wonder what they expect from him. Every time he goes to the mound and pitches against other guys, like what are they looking for? Is it velocity? Is it break? Is that all they care about? Do they not care if he walks? Guy, like, I don't know what the criteria is for him to be excited or them to be excited about moving forward. That's intriguing.
I was correct.
Uh-oh.
The Yankees are in for 3 games. I should have known that after the Rockies. So there is... I'm not playing doctor here, and I don't know about Danny Jansen, because I would have to think that part of the issue would be catching and throwing as well as just hitting with that injury. Mm-hmm. But there does appear as if there is a chance that when the Yankees come into town on Monday, you may have one of the two guys back out of the bullpen. Maybe you've got both of them.
Yeah, that would help a lot. Like, that would be a giant boost to energy to the pen and everybody. Routine-wise.
I would think you want, no disrespect to Eric Swanson, but we all know he had a difficult spring, and he's probably got to be a little bit behind Jordan Romano.
Doesn't sound that way. Sounds like he's, you know, almost close to getting it going, and he can pitch in a big league game.
I guess if he's pitching a Triple-A the same day that Jordan Romano's pitching, I mean, maybe that's an indication that he's not that far off. But, boy, if you could get one of those two, if you could have Romano up here for the Yankees series.
That'd be nice,
series,
wouldn't it? Yeah.
As you would say, man, you're cooking with gravy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the way your offense is starting to look, and you're hopefully running the bases and playing defense the way you should be doing those two things, and now you got your closer or your setup guy back, and then sort of everybody else can fill in the blanks other places and get in the routine of doing that. Yeah, and you can match up the way if you're John Snyder. I mean, it makes it easier for everybody.
Ben made an interesting point, you know. If you look at Isaiah, what Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has done so far at the plate, and we've kind of, you know, let's face it. I mean, I think we all, none of us, up until the start, I'll be honest, up until the start of the regular season, I didn't believe Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was going to be the Blue Jays' third baseman. I thought there would be some deal, something would be made. I don't know. I still think that by the end of the season, someone else is going to have played more games than him at third base. I'm not saying he doesn't have a spot in the team. They've given him a 2-year contract. Maybe he, you know, fills the Whit Merrifield role. But offensively, he's given me a little more than I thought I would get out of him so far.
Yeah, he's 6 for his last 12 in his last 3 games. Like, that's, you know, I think
he's had good at bats.
Well, he's hitting the ball the other way, which is what you want to do, right? You know, don't take balls you should be putting a good pass on. You know, I think sometimes early in seasons, you're trying too hard. You're trying to show people that you deserve to be the third baseman, and you start taking pitches you should be swinging at and putting your A swing on. And it just looks to me like he's a little bit more comfortable at the plate now. He's letting the ball travel a little bit more. He's hitting more line drives the other way, which will tell you he's seeing the ball longer. Mm-hmm. You know, mechanically, he's good enough to be able to get the barrel to some velocity, which is a good thing. And he's hitting the breaking ball. You know, he's still striking out some, but that's who he is. He's going to strike out some. You know, if you can stay somewhere where he's at, hitting the fastball and be competitive against the breaking ball and continue to think the other way instead of maybe trying to pull some balls that you probably are not capable of pulling. Look, this is bottom of the order, getting on base for the four big guys at the top of the order. That's what your job is, right, is to get on base. Don't try and reinvent the wheel and be something you're not. And it just looks to me like he's a little bit more comfortable. You know, you see him smiling a little bit more. That's a big deal. Like, being comfortable at who you are is three-quarters of the battle. And when you're starting to see that, and then the results are starting to be there, and you gain a bunch of confidence, and you can take off that way. He's a good defender. I mean, nobody can argue that.
I was going to say that
it's not his fault they gave him $15 million either.
No. And you know what? Let me tell you.
You wouldn't take it? They gave it to you? Absolutely.
In today's marketplace, a one-war player, one wins above replacement player, it's about $8 million. That's roughly the cost of that. So
he's a two-war player?
Can he be a one-war player? Possibly. I'll tell you, that's the way teams look at contracts, and I think that's the way people have to
be a 300 on base guy, play great defense. I mean, I think they'd be happy with that. You get on base because of where he's hitting in the order, he'll flip it over for the first four guys, and I think that's what they want from him.
I'm going to say this. For a team that lost Matt Chapman, I have been pleasantly surprised at how good the infield defense has been, regardless of who's in it.
Like, I think you should know that.
I mean, I really liked her. I didn't realize how good a defender Ernie Clement could be. I just didn't. Mm-hmm. And when I look now at some combination of, and I think Biggio's had a really good series defensively.
Yeah, he's a big leaguer.
When I look at Biggio's defense and Bo and Kiner Falefa and what Ernie Clement gives him, and at first base, I mean, Justin Turner still kind of scares me at third base, but what Vladdy gives him at first base, that has impressed me. They've missed Matt Chapman less than I thought they would. I understand it's early days. You know, let's talk in the middle of the dog days of August when it's 120 degrees and that. Let's see then. But I thought they would miss Matt Chapman's defense.
Yeah, I think they're prepared. We had Ernie on, and that's the first thing out of his mouth was when he goes between the lines, he knows what's going on. Like,
well, you know what he is? He's a guy, he understands who he is as a player. Like, he understands what he can do and what he can't.
Yeah, there's a little competition there, too. I think John's telling, you know, three or four different guys that if you're hitting, you're playing.
Yeah.
And there's some competition there, and I think you're starting to see guys competing against each other, which that doesn't make you a bad person. That doesn't make you a good friend. That just makes you, you better get it going. You better have better at-bats. You better catch the balls. You better throw it to where it needs to be thrown, or I'm going to play more than you. And there's nothing wrong with that, and I think that's what a lot of good teams all need to have.
First pitch is just a few minutes away. It is 3:07. Will be Yusei Kikuchi on the mound for the Blue Jays, Logan Gilbert for the Seattle Mariners. The Jays going for the series sweep of the Mariners. They'll have tomorrow off. They'll take on the Colorado Rockies in the three-game series in the weekend. A reminder that we will be doing Blue Jays talk following the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on all the Sportsnet TV channels. If you want to be part of it, call us on the back leg line, 416-413-3959. Leave your name and location. You can text us at 590-590 as well. And again, also leave your name and location. So, Yusei Kikuchi, you talked about this, needs to be more efficient. Give me something I should look for. Beyond, you know, a very quick first inning, which would suggest it's good, but something I should look for or something we should look for early out of the gate from Yusei Kikuchi.
He's thrown strike one 52% of the time. Why I bring that up is league average is 61%. Get it closer to that, he'll be fine. I think that's what it is. I think it's as simple as that. All the mechanics, he's figured that out. He's not mechanically perfect guy because he's a hard thrower and he's a grunter. Like, he's gonna max effort occasionally. Max effort guys all the time are not mechanically perfect. And occasionally you're going to miss up and away arm side. So throw strike one. That'll make that breaking ball that you want to throw more. And, you know, sometimes if you want to mix in the other off-speed pitches that you got, it'll make it easier for you to do that. And it'll get the batter into swing mode. And if you do that against a team that's struggling offensively like the Mariners are, it'll get you a little bit deeper in the game. And it'll allow you not to have to throw as many pitches because – his secondary stuff is not always great. The more they see it, the worse off he will be. Meaning if he throws fewer pitches an inning, he doesn't have to show it to them as much. He will be better off. He won't give up as many hits or as many runs. He'll go deeper in a game, and they'll have a better chance of winning that day. So I think for me right now with Yusei, because of all the mechanical changes and, you know, he sort of has come into his own and he's gotten past the being here and trying too hard because of how much they paid him, I think if he controls the heart rate early and can throw strike one more, that's basically as simple as it needs to be for him because of how hard he does throw.
Let's run down the Blue Jays lineup again for you. Ahead of the game, George Springer leading off in right field. Vladdy is DHing today. He is hitting second. Bo Bichette at shortstop. Justin Turner gets the start at first base. Kevin Biggio is at second. Alejandro Kirk. Ben Shulman pointed out, heavy workload for Kirkie. Alejandro Kirk behind the plate today. Kevin Kiermaier in center. Ernie Clement at third base. Dalton Varsho back in the lineup in left field. We mentioned Yusei Kikuchi on the mound for the Mariners. Crawford, Rodriguez, France, Haniger, Polanco, Garver, Rally, Moore, and Urias. And Logan Gilbert on the mound for them. That's it for us. Enjoy the baseball. Don't forget, Blue Jays Talk following the game, 416-413-3959. Leave a voice note, your name and location. 590-590 is the text line. We'll be back to talk to you right after the game with Blue Jays Talk. Enjoy the baseball.